Just between you and I, the rules of the English language is suffering a lot of abusiveness. Seemingly wishing to appear cultured, common phrases are to be avoided even when it's correct. The fact is that even the broadcast media is not a safe haven. Hopefully, the phenomena of bad usage is improving. And perhaps the little book we're about to discuss, aptly named Between You and I, will help. Its author, James Cochran, was educated at Cambridge, and he's worked in publishing since 1961, when he joined Penguin Books UK as an editor. James Cochran joins us from the epicenter of proper English, the BBC in London. Thanks for talking with us.
Good evening. Hello.
Hello. Which of the dozen or so errors in the introduction grates most harshly on your ears?
There are many worse. I didn't get as many as a dozen. I picked up six or seven. Phenomena used as a singular noun. Media used as if it were a singular noun. Epicenter is another one. Epicenter is just an absurd way of saying centre. As to whether the BBC is the centre of or epicentre of good English these days, I'm not so sure. Many of the worst examples in my little book come from the once revered British Broadcasting Corporation.
What are the most common errors that you run across?
One that you illustrated in your introduction is very mysterious and very common. It is the repetition of the word is, as in the point is that, or the question is whether. Another one is equally strange and basically rather stupid, which is the practice of taking the number of the verb, whether it's single or plural, from the nearest noun rather than from the subject of the verb. Such as in the case, the shortage of essential supplies are very worrying, rather than the shortage of essential supplies is very worrying, the subject being shortage.
If you could pick one entry of your little catalogue to read as a caution for listeners of Weekend Edition, which one would you pick?
Difficult. One of my favourite bugbears is the difference between may and might, and the fact that the word might has practically vanished from the language.
Explain that to us a little more.
Okay, the past tense of the word may, as in the one of the sentences I use as an illustration in my book, it goes as follows. This is a tour guide near Eton College, the famous public school near Windsor. Who says, there is Eton College where Prince Charles may have gone to school. If you say Eton College where Prince Charles may have gone to school, that rather suggests that unknown to his parents and the general public, he secretly attended that school. It would have been much clearer if the speaker had said, there is Eton College where Prince Charles might have gone to school.
We should make it clear that when you subtitle your book A Little Book of Bad English, you're not talking about bad English like four-letter words.
No, absolutely not. It's a very limited kind of bad English. It certainly isn't four-letter words or slang or split infinitives or what used to be the concern of pedants about language. I'm, on the whole, very much in favour of language change and the kind of enrichment that goes on in language all the time. But this is a particular kind of very often stupid, dishonest, impoverishing use of language.
Impoverishing?
I think so, yes. It makes the language less rich, less honest in some cases, less clear.
What would be an example?
Well, practically anything in the book, of course, is an example. But as an example of less honest English, there are a number of current euphemisms, some of which I regret to say come from the United States. Things like, for example, saying, I had to let him go, rather than I had to fire him. Now, that's a dishonest pretense that you're not firing somebody, you're giving him permission to leave, whether he wants to or not. And there are rather too many euphemisms of that kind around in the language at the moment.
I'm thinking of paradigm shift, which seems to be a phrase that people find useful in a conversation to broaden the thinking.
Well, I don't know what paradigm shift means exactly, and I would be interested to ask anyone who uses it what it does mean. Is it very different from shift or a big change? I think before you use a phrase like that with a very special meaning, it is worth asking, do I really know what this actually means, and am I gaining anything, or am I serving the language well by using it without a clear sense of its meaning, maybe to make myself sound a little more intelligent than I actually am.
One reviewer called you an old-fashioned English snob for worrying about vernacular changes in the language. What do you say to that?
Well, the person who said that was a Marxist professor who in the review said that he hesitated before deciding that I wasn't a fascist, but merely an old-fashioned English snob. I think his is, I have to say, a very questionable view. And by the way, I'm not English, I'm a Scotsman.
But I think perhaps the larger point was that people who worry about grammar as carefully as you do are old fogies.
Maybe so. I'm quite happy to admit being an old fogey. I still think it's important. I think it's important for clarity of speech, for eliminating or reducing ambiguity in speech, and I still think the language is to be valued rather than devalued. So if that means being an old fogey, then I confess to being an old fogey.
James Cochran is the author of Between You and I, A Little Book of Bad English, published by Sourcebooks. He spoke to us from London. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.